You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. The California recall election has dominated many of the headlines in recent weeks, with 135 candidates vying to replace embattled Governor Gray Davis. One group has come along and said if the California governor can be recalled, why not the president? Michael Lux, Democratic political strategist, is the founder of Fair and Balanced Political Action Committee that has launched a website to recall Bush. Lux spoke with Peace Watch recently.
We were inspired by actually the quotes from the Republicans on the recall effort. What they said was Gray Davis has turned surpluses into deficits. They said was that Gray Davis presided over the loss of hundreds of thousands of jobs in California. You make it millions of jobs nationwide, and you check that off for Bush. What they said was that Gray Davis had presided over rising utility costs, rising health care costs, all kinds of economic problems. That's true of Bush as well. And then they said something that we thought was really true, which is that you should hold the chief executive accountable for the problems in their administration. And we feel that's absolutely true with George Bush. He has presided over the worst economy in a generation. He's presided over the worst budget deficit ever and the worst turnaround in the budget situation ever. He's lied to the American public on a whole range of issues, one issue after another. And so we basically felt that what we ought to do is use their own rhetoric against them and create a website that could be a galvanizing force for activists around the country, that could raise money to do advertising going after Bush, that could work in a whole range of different ways to beat George Bush in the 2004 mm-hmm. election.
So what's been the general response since you've actually launched this campaign, both from the politicians and the public at large?
We've already gotten over 30,000 signatures since we launched the site just a few days ago. And that was in the last week of August. And we haven't even done any broader email communications with bigger lists. We're talking with a variety of organizations who share our goals, different PACs and other groups that want to beat Bush, and we think we can enlist a lot of them.
Do people think then that it's not really, you know, making the comparison between George Bush and Gray Davis, they accept that? They don't think it's far-fetched?
I don't think people think it's far-fetched at all. In fact, the people I'm talking to, if you look at the statistics, basically the statistics are far worse with George Bush. And if you look at the problems that Gray Davis has created or presided over versus the problems that George Bush has created or presided over, the ones with Bush are far worse.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Republicans complain about Gray Davis lying about budget numbers. Well, the lies about budget numbers were he was overly optimistic about the budget numbers last year. George Bush has been overly optimistic about the budget numbers during the campaign. During the transition, at every single point in the budgeting process for the last 3 years, every single time his numbers have been flat wrong. So you start making the comparisons and you realize there's far more reason to get rid of George Bush.
Mm-hmm. And you also pointed out that President Bush has lied to the American people and cost American lives as a result of that.
Absolutely.
Why not an impeachment?
Well, I think impeachment is not a judicial process. I think it's a political process. I would much rather spend my time doing something that I think is possible, beating him next year, mm-hmm. than something that I think is going nowhere, which an impeachment drive I think would go nowhere.
Beating George Bush is one thing. Electing another Democrat is something else. Who would you put in place? The effort has to be more than just let's just beat George Bush.
Actually, I don't agree with you. I think this election, more than any election that we've had, is going to be a referendum on George Bush. He's proven himself to be a danger to the world as well as to America. He's proven himself to be completely incompetent as president. And I think we need to get rid of him, and that's what's going to be the focus.
Anybody but Bush
basically.
Is going to basically be the campaign mantra.
Yes. My goal with this project is to help drive his negatives up and his positives down. If I do a good job of that and the Democrats nominate a halfway decent candidate, then we've got a shot at beating this guy. We've asked people to not only sign the petition but also give us their home address and get on our list as part of the network, because we want to, I mean, and we're blunt with people. We want to keep going back to people. We want to be able to get information out to folks on a regular basis, go back to people with toolkits and with other kinds of ways to help the effort. So we are keeping track of who's signing up and where they're from.
And where are they from? All over the country?
All over the country, yeah. I haven't actually checked to see if every single state, but I knew the last time I checked we were at almost every single state.
Actually,
plenty of Texans. There's a lot of Texans who really don't like George Bush because they know him better than –
Not just a Dixie chick.
Not only that.
30,000, I mean, that's impressive for a week. But what kind of numbers would you really need to have in order to make this a reality?
Ultimately, we're going to need to have several hundred thousand people sign up and be part of it. And we hope we can get there. We think that if people forward this along to their friends, we think that if people – respond to the different ways of helping, we think that we're going to be able to build a great list and then keep going back to people for projects. We are we're big fans of other internet organizing projects. Wes Boyd from MoveOn.org, for example, is a friend, and we believe in what they've done. We're going to try to do some similar things, and we think we need to build a list of several hundred thousand people to get it done.
Mm-hmm. And the toolkit, what will be contained in that?
The toolkit will be very specific things that people can do in their local community via the internet. We'll try to teach people how to go out and register voters, how to target voters and go into neighborhoods and talk to people. We'll give people samples of campaign literature. We'll give people samples of different quotes that Bush has made and that Cheney has made and that other folks in the administration have made. We'll give people reports on the different lies that have been told and are being told by the Bush people. And we'll give people a steady stream of that kind of information so that they can go out in their communities and work with other activists to make a difference in the election.
And so do you have any way of determining whether, for example, some of the signatories to your campaign are with labor unions or with the teachers' unions, or what kind of people are responding?
Well, we don't know for sure. We're gonna go back and do some surveys of the members over time as we build it. And we are going to do everything we can to work closely with the organizations that you're talking about, and I'm initiating conversations with folks in those organizations. So we hope that we have a very broad cross-section, but we won't know for sure until we survey the membership.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a polling mechanism?
Yes, we do. We're going to do other projects that I work on already do a lot of polling, and we're going to keep in touch with some of the polling projects that are already out there and some of the key pollsters that are already doing work in that area. But that will definitely be part of our strategy.
Finally, while most states allow governors to be impeached, only 18 actually have voter recall measures written into their constitutions. And the process of recalling an elected official doesn't exist, of course, on the federal level. So we're actually talking about impeachment here. Or is this all merely a symbolic gesture to raise awareness?
This is a symbolic gesture. As I said, we don't think there's any practical chance of impeaching the president, and we want to get on with something that's actually going to make a difference. We think we can beat him next year, and we think that BushRecall.org can make a difference in that. He really has been remarkably misleading to the American public about what he's all about.
But are they feeling as though he has been, or is that just a few liberal progressives?
Well, I actually think that's starting to change. The polling numbers that I'm looking at are indicating that people are more and more distrustful of him, that they're more and more aware. He really has not been truthful with people. And focus groups, when you watch focus groups, people are talking about the fact that No Child Left Behind. People are starting to laugh about the name of that bill because they realize it doesn't mean anything.
Some high school children are being recruited into the military in some instances.
that's about the only thing that's happened. More testing, but testing doesn't mean anything when there are no resources to actually educate anybody.
And that website again?
Website is www.bushrecall.org.
And what will people see Is it user-friendly?
It is user-friendly. We have several different sections. People will see a petition that they can sign.
Now, how do you sign one of those petitions on the websites?
Well, you just go in and follow the instructions, okay. Basically. Mm-hmm. You put your name in and you check some boxes. And we also ask for some additional information so that we know where people are actually live, so that if, for example, we will be in touch with other groups that are going to be doing phone calling or door-to-door work in neighborhoods around the country, we'll be able to help activists figure out how to plug into things at their local level when they give us their addresses.
Okay, Michael Lux, Democratic political strategist and founder of the Fair and Balanced Political Action Committee. Any final thoughts on your part, Michael?
This is an important effort. We're going to be working with a lot of different organizations such as Progressive Majority and 21st Century Democrats and other PACs to promote this. We think that we can raise some good money, build some good lists, and really energize people around going after Bush.
Michael Lux, founder of the Fair and Balanced Political Action Committee. Their website again, bushrecall.org.
Oh, beautiful, for specious lies and fake bin Laden tips, for yellow cake, uranium, and evidence that's baked. America, America, there's oil, don't you see? Though it's a sham, I'll bomb Saddam, so there'll be more for me. Oh, beautiful, for patriot act that makes dissenters fear. If they protest their false arrest, we'll lock them up for years. America, America, with Bush you must agree. You'd best suck up or get locked up for all eternity.
George's America.
This is Anthony Sloan, a.k.a. T, from the Pattersons Taking the Train to Tibet, the engineer and sometimes sound gatherer for Pacifica's Peace Watch. I do hope you are being informed by our efforts here. If you find what we do valuable, please make a financial commitment to Peace Watch so we may continue our work on your behalf. Kindly make a secure online pledge by visiting our website at pacifica.org. That's pacifica.org. Or you may send us a tax-exempt donation via check or money order addressed to Peace Watch, care of Pacifica, 2390, that's 2390, Champlain, Champlain, Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. Thank you so much for your support, and I'll see you on the front lines. Peace.
Well, as activists with the website bushrecall.org compare what they call President Bush and California Governor Gray Davis's similarly dismal records on the economy, we're going to take a look at some of the domestic costs of the war. Earlier this week, senior administration officials crafted an ambitious spending plan to fund the continually rising cost of the Iraq occupation. Sources close to the matter figure it may total as much as $65 billion, that's with a B, dollars. Peace Watch producer Scott Gurian checked with Dean Baker of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, Frida Berrigan of the World Policy Institute, Arun Prabhakaran of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union, and former welfare mother Diane Dujon to ask them how they think the money might be better spent. And here's what they said.
This is simply going to add to the deficit. I mean, we're already running a deficit on the order of $450-500 billion. So, you know, you add $60-70 billion to that, and, you know, it's not in and of itself that big a deal. But over a longer term, obviously, it can't be maintained.
Overall, the United States is spending about $4 billion each month on the war in Iraq and another billion on the ongoing occupation and military action in Afghanistan. That's $5 billion that the United States is spending each month on war in two countries.
So the issue is, if we're looking at this as an ongoing expenditure, then you're either going to have to raise taxes, which of course the Bush administration is not going to talk about, or you're going to have to look to have some very large cuts in domestic social spending.
I mean, we have a million different needs that we're not meeting. I mean, right now, it's almost like families could be homeless for the rest of their lives and nobody cares. Once you fall into homelessness, it's so hard to get out. Our schools are not being funded the way they should. I work at a public university, and the funding has been cut so drastically, and they're laying off so many people that it's hard to provide the kind of services that the students need. And the students need money. They're crying about their financial aid being cut. So there's a lot of needs we have that we're not able to meet because we're spending all this money to go have war and destroy other families and other societies. You'd think we'd have progressed beyond that by now.
We just finished this march from Marks, Mississippi to Washington, D.C., commemorating the Poor People's Campaign of 1968 by Martin Luther King. And it's important to note how the questions that King raised at that time are just as pressing now. At that time, America was deepening its involvement in Vietnam, and Martin Luther King questioned it. He called for us to pursue a course to fight to end poverty rather than bringing Americans home in body bags fighting against guerrilla fighters in a morally questionable war. At this time, we find that poor and homeless families are asking the very same question. And why are we spending just shy of $1 billion a week to be chased around in the desert by Saddam Hussein instead of housing America's homeless families, providing health care to every American, living up to our responsibilities to make our children's right to education a reality? I mean, poor and homeless families in this country, as well as working class families, want real homeland security. That means secure jobs at a living wage, safe, affordable housing, protection for our real treasures, our health and well-being, and a good quality of life.
The World Game Institute estimates that it would cost $5 billion to eliminate illiteracy throughout the world. So 1 month of war versus world literacy. Here in this country, 75% of school buildings are in need of major repair work. The American Society of Civil Engineers estimates that it would cost $127 billion to repair America's schools and make them safe and comfortable places. So what we spend on war and destruction in Iraq in just 6 short months would have a fundamental impact on the learning environment of America's children.
This is real money. You know, a lot of times you get debates over things, and at the end of the day, it doesn't matter that much, at least in terms of the budget, whether it goes up or down. But $65 to $70 billion is definitely real money. But if you were to talk about literally cutting $70 billion, let's say, from the budget, and for the moment, let's assume, you know, we're not going to cut it elsewhere from the military, at least I don't hear a lot of people talking about that. That's a really big chunk of what's left. You know, you're looking at everything from food stamps, you know, whatever we might have, public transportation, environmental programs. If you actually kept up this level of spending, these would be large cuts.
I think the $65 billion that they're asking for, in addition to the $100 billion that have been spent, not including the cost of rebuilding Iraq, are being spent in such a way that are costing us in this country a whole lot of money. In Philadelphia, where we're from, you know, Kensington Welfare Rights Union is based in the poorest neighborhood in the state of Pennsylvania, that it's costing Philadelphians $322 million a year to be going to war. We're not able to provide funding for drug and alcohol treatment programs, for education programs, for Head Start, for a number of different programs that are affecting, you know, people who really want to make a good living in this country and make this country a great place to be.
If I were president, I'd definitely spend it on our families, helping people to feel some kind of security, helping people to stay in their homes and with their families and to be able to take care of their families in a way that's healthy for them and for our society as a whole. You know, we produce enough food in this country to feed the world. Well, how come we have people that are hungry? You know, housing is a real serious issue. So I definitely would put more money into housing programs instead of cutting them, and trying to convince landlords that, you know, we need to have reasonable rents. We have workers that aren't getting raises, even though the cost of living is going up. So there's a lot of different things. We definitely way past the time for universal health care. So if I were president, I would be funding all of those programs to make us have a better, more healthy society than going to war.
You know, if we want to make sure that our country has the kind of homeland security we want, real homeland security, we need to start to think about how we're going to address these issues with whichever administration becomes in charge of running this country next year. And so we need to make sure that we are fighting for economic human rights for every person, and that we need to look to how we can end the problem of poverty in this country.
It is striking that, you know, the Bush administration was very resistant to having any discussion of, you know, what the cost might be prior to the war. And, you know, I think he and certainly the members of Congress that supported the war, having obviously no idea of what the costs were, you know, really have to answer for that, because you could argue whatever you want about the war, but if you go into it without even having an idea of what the costs are going to be, that's pretty incredible.
But when we look at the United States' total military budget, which is almost $400 billion for 2003, on top of what we spend on war in Iraq and Afghanistan and other places, we see how children measure up against bombers and fighter planes. Each second, this country spends $12,000 on war and preparation for war, while each year we spend just half that per child on public education. The United States spends less than $6,000 per child per year on public education. So while overall estimates of the total costs of war differ wildly, this $4 billion a month figure is widely accepted, and it's projected that the United States will be an occupying force in Iraq at least for the next 10 years. So we look at a cost of the war of around $480 billion. And that figure doesn't take into account the long-term economic consequences of war, nor the staggering human costs of the war. Meanwhile, the people of this country, the richest nation in the world, suffer from our government's upside-down priorities. Eisenhower said, "Every gun that is made, every warship that is launched, every rocket fired signifies, in a final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, from those who are cold and are not clothed." I think that that statement is as relevant today, perhaps even more relevant than it was when he said it.
We're supposed to learn from history. We've seen the rise and falls of many great societies, and the reason those societies fall is because a few people get way more than they ever need in 50 lifetimes, and the masses of people don't get enough. And so that causes turmoil in a society, and I would think we need to learn from history and this time do it right. Take care of our people, meet their needs so that we can continue as a healthy, happy society, not creating more victims of war, because that comes home to visit us. It doesn't just stay in another country. Those men come home and they've been taught how to be aggressive, and they're in a combative mode. And they come home and they're not reacculturated into our society. So those are other programs that I would fund. I would fund something so that when the soldiers come home, they can be reacculturated to how to live with their families and the people that love them. And that's what I think we need to do. Learn from history and try to do it right this time.
With the Massachusetts Welfare Rights Union. Dean Baker is the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Frida Berrigan is a researcher with the World Policy Institute. Arun Prabhakaran is a member of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union. They spoke with Peace Watch producer Scott Gurian. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Our producer is Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is T from the Pattersons, taking the train to Tibet. We had production assistance from Jim Bennett and Otto Hammond of KPFA, Matt Bradley and Sam Husseini. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Alex Mitchell at WebActive.com for web help. It's your financial support that makes Peace Watch possible, so we urge you to make a generous donation through our secure online website at pacifica.org, or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send your feedback to us at peacewatch@pacifica.org. You can also visit webactive.com to listen to archives of past Peace Watch programs. To get a copy of this show, call the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.